He talked for a while. We had a long testimony.
It was open. Good morning. We've got a couple of public hearings to go through. Senator Olson is here first, so we'll start with Senate Bill 434. I think Chris is here to do a presentation. Senator Olson, if you want to step up. And we're looking at Senate Bill 434 with the dash two amendments to be discussed simultaneously. Chris.
You don't look like a Chris. You look like a Kyle.
Yeah. I'm sorry, Kyle.
I'm just checking.
Quite all right. I'm sure Chris is insulted somewhere. But. good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 434, it makes modifications to an existing exemption. So right now in statute, there are there's an existing exemption for disabled veterans and their surviving spouses. And there's really, you can kind of think of it, the existing law has almost two tiers, if you will, of exemption. The first is in the amount of about $19,500 in assessed value that is exempted for property tax for veterans with disabilities of 40% or more that also have income less than or equal to 185% of the federal poverty levels. The second tier is for veterans with service-connected disabilities of 40% or more, and that exemption amount is $23,486. These exemption amounts grow by 3% per year, so at one point they were nice round numbers, but they grow each tax year. And so the changes in 434 is it would add a third tier, if you will, of exemption equal to $60,000 in assessed value that is exempted, and that would grow by 3% per year going forward. And that's for veterans with service-connected disabilities equal to 100%. And we do have a dash A2 amendments, and the changes there would be there's a kind of an LC cleanup under the modifying the definition of surviving spouse of a veteran. And then also it makes changes that to the qualification criteria that would allow veterans that are disabled or have 100% or more disability. And the way it was explained to me is when they kind of it's almost a score, if you will, of percentage disabled. So a certain injury could equal a certain amount of percentage of disability. So if you sum up multiple injuries, that's how you can get to more than 100%. And then just to reiterate, all three of these exemptions, the two existing and the new one, they are available to the surviving spouse so long as the surviving spouse remains unmarried. And the changes would begin with property tax years beginning on or after July 1st, 2015.
Okay. All right, let's start with Senator Olson.
Thank you, Chair Hass, Senator Boquist, Vice Chair Boquist, and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Alan Olson. I'm a senator representing Senate District 20. I am a veteran. I came out of the service unharmed. Many of our veterans leave the service with some form of disability due to the lengthy conflicts we've been in the last 50 years. For example, Vietnam, the first Gulf War, Afghanistan and Iraq. Many return without arms or legs or with PTSD. In Oregon, 7,600 have returned with disabilities of 100% or more. Their lives have been irreparably harmed, but yet they survived. Those that are supported by the government receive approximately $3,100 a month to live on. Property taxes are a big part of the dollars they must spend each month to stay in homes that have been modified to meet their own personal needs. Property taxes go up by at least 3% per year at the minimum. Senate Bill 434 simply asks that we honor their service by reducing the burden on their monthly income. Our property tax laws give an exemption on taxes starting at 40% disabled, which allows a $15,000 exemption on a veteran's property. A second exemption is allowed up to $18,000 of the assessed value of a home if the veteran suffers from a service-connected disability or disabilities of at least 40%. Please remember that those veterans that are 100% disabled receive the same exemption as those that are only 40% disabled. Senate Bill 434 is an attempt to resolve the inequity. There are over 300,000 veterans in Oregon and more to come as we wind down from our wars. No one has an exact count of those veterans that are 100% or more disabled, as the exemptions begin at 40% disabled, and that is how they were tracked. ODVA used a number of approximately 7,600 veterans that are now or that are at the 100% level. They also assumed that only 60% of those 7,600 owned homes. That would mean we would be giving exemptions to about 4,500 veterans, but as I said, no one really knows the exact number. Senate Bill 434A, with the Dash 2 amendment, which you've just heard, is a bill that gives veterans who are 100% or more disabled an exemption of $60,000 on their property taxes. It would also allow an unmarried spouse of the veteran to maintain this exemption upon the death of the veteran. It would not allow the exemption if the spouse remarries. That exemption is in the Dash A2 amendment, along with the change that states if you are 100% or more disabled. The or more was brought to our attention by veterans that are 100% disabled. We sent inquiries to all 36 counties. 24 counties responded. They were Coos, Benton, Sherman, Tillamook, Yamhill, Marion, Morrow, Lynn, Lane, Jefferson, Josephine, Jackson, Hood River, Wasco, Union, Grant, Harney, Wheeler, Washington, Gilliam, Deschutes, Polk, Multnomah, and Curry. 12 counties that did not respond were Baker, Clackamas, Clatsop, Columbia, Crook, Douglas, Klamath, Lake, Lincoln, Melhor, Umatilla, and Wallawa. The top five counties that were in support of the bill were Multnomah, Washington, Union, Harney, and Gilliam. The counties that do not support the spouse exemption, which there were several, are Polk, Grant, Jackson, Yamhill, and Lane. These counties sent in very distinct little notes as we asked them. And from a response from Curry County, I could support if the administrative impact was minimal. From Hood River County, I like the concept, but don't understand why when anyone remarries, we would continue to give them the benefits they received due to a prior marriage. Additionally, the surviving spouse issue would add greater complexity to the administering of the program, which I don't support. So to the answer to the question, if amended to remove the surviving spouse concept, I would support. And that was from Hood River County. From Polk County, I do not like the ability of a spouse at any age who remarries to receive the $60,000 benefit. If the spouse remarries, the benefit should be lost. I understand that the spouse endured the disability of the veteran, but the spouse should not get the benefit if they remarry. So you can see the trend here towards why we remove the spousal support. I do not support the ability of a spouse at any age who remarries to receive the $60,000 benefit. Yamhill County. Sherman County says, we don't have any vets with 100% disability. One county that doesn't. And finally, nope, there's one more. Harney County, not a deal breaker for us if they were given the 100% exemption. Plus, it would be very hard for me to argue against the concept given the impact of the disability has had on their lives. And that was from Harney County. And finally, from Deschutes County, and this is the government, typical government. Sorry I didn't respond sooner, but my veterans exemption expert was on vacation and just returned. Unfortunately, our software doesn't have much of this information. Therefore, we'd have to manually go through each file and look at the disability rating for each. Committee members, to me, this is an important bill to honor our service veterans who, given almost their all, 100% disability.
Senator, you have a team of people up here with you. I'd like to hear from them if we could. Charles Upton, Cameron Smith, and I also have Wayne Harvey. You guys want to come up here? Can they join you?
Sure, absolutely. Absolutely.
You can just grab another chair.
I appreciate the support. If I may, this is important to our veterans, so that we can give them some stability in their property tax life, if you will. It's very expensive for them. If I was a 100% disabled veteran, my property taxes would cost me about $400 a month. And when you take that out of the $3,100 that they receive, it becomes very costly. So I think this exemption would help them tremendously. And I would take any questions.
Good morning, Chairman Haas, members of the committee, guests. For the record, my name is Wayne Harvey. I'm the current chairman of the United Veterans Groups of Oregon, the UVGO, and I'm the current president of the Retired Enlisted Association for the state of Oregon. UVGO is made up of military veterans from 10 different veterans organizations that come together to present a unified position on matters concerning the welfare of Oregon's 350,000 veterans and their dependents and or survivors. Senate Bill 434 will provide needed tax assistance to those veterans and their families that are most in need of this assistance. So I come to you today on behalf of these member organizations, my fellow veterans, and their families, to go on record expressing our support for Senate Bill 434 and to ask for your support by moving this bill out of committee and to the floor with a due pass recommendation as needed. Thank you.
Mr. Upton.
Morning, Senator Haas, distinguished members. My name is Charles Upton, and I'm the department commander for the military or the Purple Heart of Oregon. We have 478 members in our department here in Oregon, and most of those are living with 100% disability, which often means that we cannot go out and seek other employments. So we're stuck at the money that we receive from the government, which is, like has been said, is not all that much, considering we have house payments, car payments, food, kids, grandkids. And this bill will help us to live a better life. So I urge support on this bill. Thank you.
Before we go any further, do we have any questions of the people up here? Thank you, sirs. Thank you, Senator Olson.
Thank you.
Cameron Smith.
Good morning, Chair Haas, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Cameron Smith, the director of the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs. And it is hard for me as a proud Marine to admit when an Army soldier has a good idea, but I want to thank Senator Olson for bringing this concept forward. Oregon has long had the property tax exemption at the levels we heard for 40% disabled or above. And we see across our fellow apples and oranges of other states across the nation, often very different approaches on how they give property tax exemption to their disabled veterans. Some do a graduated scale, lower level, and increasing. We've had 40%, which is a good mark, but often we see when 100% disabled veterans move into Oregon, they've had a greater benefit in another state from where they are coming. This would, right now we have 320,000 veterans across Oregon. As Senator Olson was mentioning, we estimate about 7,500 approximately are 100% disabled. Not all of them would own their own homes. Of our 320,000 veterans across, most of them live in the valley like most of our citizens, but you get to rural Oregon, while be smaller numbers of veterans there, they'll make up a quarter to a third of the population there. And somewhat unprecedented that we're serving four generations across five major wars of World War II, Korea, Vietnam, the Gulf War, Iraq, and Afghanistan, plus all those who served on humanitarian missions both here at home and around the world in between those eras. And while we hear most often about my generation of veterans of Iraq and Afghanistan in the news of late, 52% of our veterans are age 60 to 100 years old of that World War II, Korea, and Vietnam generation. Vietnam still the largest component of our veterans at 37% of our population in Oregon. And they did not receive a welcome home in their own time. And we think this greater property tax exemption would be one more effort to honor their service and sacrifice. And happy to take any questions.
Senator Ryland.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Not a question, but a comment. As a Vietnam-era vet myself in the Air Force, I think that, you know, seeing these veterans who are 100% disabled having a stable home that they can live in and not be burdened with this is a great idea, even if it did come from an Army man.
Okay, here we go.
No, I'm not going to jump into this one. I come from the purple color, so I like my brother in the Air Force, the Marines. Yeah, I guess the Marine too, and the Army. But I just want to put a couple things in the record, Mr. Chair. I think, and all of us serve on joint tax, so we went through the long litany of the good work that Representative Kenny Geyer did, and we all remember looking at the percentage of poverty and everything else of 100%, 200%, 300%, and all those tax credits the other day. I'll just point out for the record that there's a lot of misconceptions out there in the public. A veteran alone that would be 100% disabled either from the Vietnam War or from Afghanistan or Iraq, gross income from the United States government for that 100% disability is $2,908. Excuse me, $2,906.83. And if they're one from Afghanistan or Iraq with still a spouse and a child in their family, the whopping total of compensation is $3,187.60. That's gross before taxes, deductions, and everything else. And I think if you look at that on that scale that we had in the Joint Tax Committee, these are the same individuals that would be qualifying for virtually all of those low-income things because they're just between that 100 to 200% poverty level scheme. So in order for them to be in a home and have a stable situation, I think that's why the veterans, Senator Olson, and the other people brought this bill forward.
Comments or questions? Okay.
Chair Haas, members of the committee, just to add on to that, beyond just being a good bill for our veterans and in the interest of veterans, collectively, when we look at the impact of federal VA dollars, both on our urban and rural economies, $1.1 billion just of cold hard cash that our veterans draw down from the federal VA in terms of disability compensation and low-income pension works out to be about $92 million every month flowing into Oregon. And when you look at a rural county, I mean, you know, we're over $100 million annual impact in a urban county. But still being a $30 million, $40 million impact in rural Oregon is significant. If that was salaries on a mill or another small business, we would be fighting tooth and nail to how do we better support that to draw down those resources. We can measure those federal VA dollar impacts. What is harder to measure is those, what do we save in terms of the safety net services, both at the local and state level in terms of the general fund, but very real economic impact beyond the good interest for our veterans.
Good point.
Thank you.
Bill Clute, did you want to weigh in on this?
Thank you, Senator Haas. Committee for the record, Bill Clute, Carpenters, Oregon Air National Guard, 1960-1964. I want to thank Senator Olson for bringing this bill forward. This building went 40 years and never had a veterans committee. When we started them back up in the 90s, we were way behind. We're still behind helping our veterans, especially with what's been going on with the federal end of it. We still haven't got that mess cleaned up. These disabled, we're talking 100%. They gave it almost their all for this country. I don't think, even though we have some rural counties that are in tough shape, I don't think you'll have one that'll turn down a veteran on this bill. If I hear of one, send me there and I'll talk to him. Thank you.
Thank you for the questions. Thank you, sir. Before we close out, a couple questions of Kyle, who sometimes goes by Chris. You have a revenue impact statement here. Is I say 1.8 million. Is that what this bill would add, or is that total? Do you have the total?
Mr. Chair, the revenue impact statement, so this came out of the Veterans Committee, so I did issue it a light.
Mm-hmm. What did I see then on the?
I think that's probably the 2127, the next bill we'll be discussing. But
so what about the property tax revenue? Do you have an estimate on that?
Yeah, the initial estimate was somewhere between it'd be 3 or 4 million per fiscal year by increasing the exemption.
By increasing the exemption
to the 60,000 in assessed value. Yes.
Okay. Okay. And just to give you another bank shot to look at, we've been discussing, as you know, the property tax tax reform under the property tax changes, and
were we to lift the Measure 50 limits and add a homestead exemption for all homeowners, vets, and everyone, how would what's your opinion on whether we incorporate these changes like this? There's some other ones in law, as you know already. There's proposals for fallen firefighters and such. Do those get added on, or how would we go about doing that?
Mr. Chair, so the the way this the veterans want to set up, it's based on the assessed value. So it says a certain amount of assessed value is what the exemption amount is. If there was a homestead exemption applicable to all homesteads, then I guess the way, if there wanted to be additional relief specifically for veterans, you could use these numbers and add it on top of, so if there's an existing, or you make a homestead exemption of $100,000 in assessed value, you could then add on the existing, the $23,000, $18,000, or the new $60,000 on top of that to give that additional relief.
As well as the other things that are already in law.
Yes, absolutely. It would probably take, you'd want to do that as part of any tax reform package, because if you create a homestead exemption of $100,000, then immediately, because these are below that amount, they probably wouldn't apply.
It gets swallowed.
That was my point, Mr. Chair, is that if we do a homestead exemption, then all of these, virtually everyone, regardless of veterans across the board, all of them are just going to be encompassed into that. For starters. So it'd be actually a gain for some of those people versus a loss, and then you could go back and tamper with it later.
Right. Okay. Thank you all for participating in this. Thank you, Senator Olson. I'm going to close that public hearing, and I will open up a public hearing on House Bill 2127, as well as a work session on House Bill 2127.
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2127, it does come to us as an assessor bill. And it'll sound a little bit similar in theme to a measure that this committee moved out earlier. But it's the issue that has been addressed by the bill is there are instances that have been identified where property that is with a taxable owner is being transferred or sold to a tax-exempt government owner. And once it comes under the ownership of the tax-exempt owner, it then becomes very difficult to collect on it because the tax collector can no longer foreclose on the property to collect unpaid taxes. So if there are taxes that are unpaid at the time that the property is transferred from a tax owner to a government exempt owner, we've seen there's outstanding amounts out there right now. So the bill would seek to address that through a number of changes. The first of which that the measure would do is it would allow authorized agents providing closing and settlement services in conveyance of real property to tax-exempt government transferee to withhold and pay to the county in which the property is located the property taxes on the real property of what's outstanding. So this would be lawyers, maybe escrow agents that are handling the sale or the transfer of the property. They're allowed to, during that sale or transfer, to make sure the property taxes are paid as part of that transfer, but they're not required to, and it'd only be at the request of the transferor of the property. The measure would also prohibit the county clerk from recording the fee title of real property if certificate issued by county assessor does not accompany the instrument conveying or contracting to convey fee title. And the bill, later in the bill, it requires the county assessor to essentially create or to release his certificate saying that all the taxes have been paid. So the county clerk would be unable to record that title transfer until the assessor supplies that, saying all the taxes are paid. So it would essentially stop that actual recording until the taxes are paid at that time. The measure also requires a person seeking to record an instrument or sale to the exempt government transferee to pay the tax collector the amount of outstanding taxes. And if that amount is not known because perhaps the bill hasn't been released, the assessor will estimate the amount of tax that would be owed at that time. Any deficiency is required to be paid constitutes it would be a personal debt and is not going to be a lien on the property that's being transferred. As I said, it requires the assessor to issue the certificate. The Department of Revenue would create that certificate. There's some definitional terms, and this would take effect on the 91st day following adjournment signing death.
Okay, the assessors. Tom, Randy?
Oh, and Mr. Chair, just to add, we do have the paperwork here, and I can go through that later if you'd like after we have.
Okay.
Awesome. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Tom Linhares, and I represent the Oregon State Association of County Assessors, and I have two actual assessors with me today. Thank you for this opportunity to speak in support of House Bill 2127A. As Mr. Easton explained, this is similar to a bill we talked about with you a couple weeks ago, slightly different situation. This is where property is sold from a taxable entity to an exempt entity with property taxes due. My colleagues will provide a couple of real-life examples because I know that brings it home and makes it easier to wrap your head around. Mr. Easton also explained the different changes. Unlike House Bill 2128, this actually is proactive in that the first two changes being made in the bill attempt to make sure the taxes are paid before the property is transferred, so then we don't have to worry about the collection problem of collecting on property taxes from property owned by an exempt owner. That's always the best approach, get those taxes paid up front so there isn't a collection issue. If, for whatever reason, property is transferred to an exempt owner with taxes due, then the third change the bill makes converts those taxes to a personal liability of the transferor, the taxable entity, and we can collect those taxes the same way we currently collect business personal property taxes. from the former taxable owner. So the bill is fairly straightforward. Lots of good examples, which I'll let Mr. Walworth and Mr. Schmidt tell you about. And I'm just here to answer any questions if you have any. Thank you very much.
Gentlemen, we have some real-life cases to paint a picture for us.
Sure. Chair Haas, members of the committee, I'm Randy Wall from Multnomah County Assessor, Tax Collector, and County Clerk. So this bill impacts me in all three ways that's written in here. The real-life example we have, they come in from all around the state. I know Tom has one from Wasco County. The one that I have that's most illustrative is cemetery ground is exempt as long as it's being held for future burial purposes. At the point that the Cemetery Association decides not to hold it for burial purposes, future burials, and use it for development or whatever use besides that, the taxes become payable. So we have a situation in which we had cemetery ground that was sold after July 1st. We were in the process of canceling the exemption. The taxes are a potential additional tax. And so what happens if there's not already taxes on a property? Many times there's additional taxes for a clawback when the use that allows that taxes to be abated or exempted ends. So we levied the tax, sent the tax bill, but at that point the property had already transferred to the City of Portland. City of Portland got a hold of us and said, well, you can't collect the tax because once the city owns it, only the property is the security for real property taxes, as I'm sure you're all aware of. So at that point, I have no leverage in order to collect the taxes, and we're talking over $2 million here right now. So if this bill had been in place, hopefully the closing agent would have contacted us, and we would have given them the tax amount to pay, and or step two, when the deed was presented in my office, we would look for the certificate from the assessor tax collector. And without the certificate, we would have not recorded the deed. And then if somehow that deed was recorded anyway, because the clerk may have missed it, then it steps to step three, which is I would pursue collecting of the taxes from the Cemetery Association, who should have paid the tax at closing. And that's it in a nutshell. And right now, that account owes over $3 million. The taxes are sitting there, but they're not collectible.
Aside from the property tax ramifications here, one question that I think we might have is a cemetery, and now it's going to be developed. So what happens to all those bodies?
It's actually, in this case, it's vacant ground. What's happening, and this is just one example, and I know Mr. Schmidt has one, and you still have one from Wasco County.
Nobody's buried there. This is the vacant ground.
It's vacant ground. And in Oregon, we're finding that a lot of people in Oregon are now choosing for cremations. And so cemetery associations are finding that they don't need all the ground that they have. And this is just one example of various examples from around the state of where property either has taxes or potential additional taxes. Once it's transferred to an exempt entity, as the tax collector, I have no leverage to collect those taxes that should have been collected.
Chair Haas, members of the committee, Chair Haas, excuse me, members of the committee, Douglas Schmidt, Polk County Assessor. My example is not nearly as dramatic as Randy's with $2 million. Mine's about $1,000. Has to do with a developer that developed a subdivision in Independence. He had identified on the plat that there was going to be a park involved, but there was about a year and a half between when it was platted and when he finally deeded the property to the city, and we had taxed that because he had not indicated that it was really going to be developed. So when it was transferred to the city, there was about $1,000 of back tax on that piece of property. So once it went to the city, my request to them to either pay it or have the developer pay it went no response. So again, it's not as dramatic, but it does happen. And I think this one didn't actually go through a title company. It might have just went directly from the developer to the city, a deed. So in that case, it would have been possibly the clerk would have caught it, or if not, then I could go and try and collect those taxes the same way we would collect delinquent personal property taxes. So again, more of a common occurrence maybe than a $2 million, but it does happen. Property does get transferred with taxes on it.
Questions of the assessors? Senator Boquist?
I'm just curious here. Boy, this is both two of the stories, and I'm just looking at the Wasco, and it's pretty close to the same thing here, where the county should have been collecting taxes, and a city, another government entity, seemed to be the culprit and the problem here. And I'm curious, in the Multnomah County case, sure, what happened? I mean, why did the city buy this? Did the city buy it to develop it, put something of their own on there? I mean, it's a big chunk of change from the burying lot to the city government. Was there, because you said develop, was the word used?
Senator Haas, Senator Boquist. In this case, at this point, they're holding it as open space. It's on the west side. It's hilly area. So the city and various and Metro also, they're out there purchasing with bond money and other funds, open space and other land that, to my assumption is they're going to continue to hold it. It was purchased by the Parks and Recreation Department. So at this point, I don't believe that they have any development purposes.
In the property tax world, what happens if a city or even a county, but we'll use cities since you guys represent the counties, we'll just beat up the cities. If a city has a piece of land, and we have seen this in Oregon, when the city owns land like this, for example, and then a good development opportunity does come up and a public entity such as a city transfers it to a private developer, is the city then, because it's the city sold it as commercial property, is the city liable for taxes?
Chair Haas, Senator Boquist. In this example, if this property ever came back into taxable ownership, our lien is still there and valid. It's accumulating 16% interest. So at this point, this property, in your scenario, those taxes would need to be paid. If it was transferred without the taxes being paid, then the purchaser would be liable for those taxes because they would not be what's called a bona fide purchaser. So at that point, after 4 years, I would have to start foreclosure proceedings if they did not pay. I would not think anybody would want to purchase that property without those taxes paid.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any further questions?
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So this is the other side of the bill we heard before. That was for leaseholders, and mm-hmm. this is for owners transferring property. Is that the difference?
Senator Haas and Senator Riley, yes, sir, that's exactly correct. This is like the companion bill. They just got separated in timing.
Got it. Thank you.
Further questions? Senator Edwards? Okay. I think we're okay here.
Kyle, you wanted to go over the revenue impact. It does show a slight revenue impact, but it's not a bill to raise taxes, so therefore it's not a three-fifths vote.
Yes, that's correct, Mr. Chair. So the fiscal is minimal. The revenue impact is a positive revenue impact, but as you said, it's not going to increase the taxes imposed. These are taxes that are already there and outstanding. It's really more of an increase in expected collection rate if you will. And the revenue impact is about 1.6 and then 1.8 million in the biennium's out. In most years, this is going to be small dollar amounts, as the assessors were talking about. We received a listing from the assessors on kind of the outstanding amounts. So in most counties, it's a few $1,000s, and then every so often, there's large ones that come Multnomah County, and I believe Lane County was another one that had a large property. So it probably wouldn't be a steady revenue impact that's shown there. It'd be more every few years there could be a large amount. But on average, that's what it'd come out to.
Okay. Well, we have the assessors in front of us. We have the paperwork in committee.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2127A to the floor with a due pass.
Senator Boquist moves House Bill 2127 to the floor of the Oregon Senate with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion?
Mr. Chair, I just noted that 1.6 is halfway the distance to the veterans one.
Further discussion? Are there objections? Seeing none, House Bill 2127 moved to the floor of the Oregon State Senate with a due pass recommendation. We are down to or up to Senator Brian Boquist as the.
Yes, sir, I got it.
Okay. Thank you. That clears our deck for today. If there is no other business before us, we will adjourn.
Yes, let me ask about the fiscal.
We will adjourn.
Yes, let me ask about the fiscal.
Other business before us.